From Radio Sausalito in beautiful Sausalito, California, I'm Mitchell Field, and you are on the field trip. Welcome to The Field Trip, a few minutes of conversation each week with some of the most interesting people in the Bay Area and Marin County. I talk to artists and writers, actors, directors, musicians, some of the characters who make the Bay Area a fun and a fabulous place to live. So let's get right to it. My guest on today's field trip, Jeff Burkhart, is proud of the fact that he's spent 20 years behind bars. No, not in San Quentin, although some of those bars he's been behind are just a stone's throw from that institution. Jeff has spent those years as a bartender, as a cocktail historian, and a writer. Since 2006, Burkhart, who also holds a degree in journalism, has been known to readers of the Marin Independent Journal for his entertaining, wry, and sometimes cynical weekly column entitled Barfly. Burkhart also wrote a wine calendar series entitled What Do You Know About Wine, which became a number 3 national bestseller for Barnes & Noble. His latest book is called 20 Years Behind Bars, and it's a guide, part trade manual and part psychological musings. It combines real-life observations of life in the bar trade with facts and information about people and alcohol in a fun and irreverent fashion. Christopher Kimball from America's Test Kitchen says of the book, it's more about mixing people than mixing drinks. Well, 2013 was the 80th anniversary of the repeal of Prohibition, so the question is, shaken or stirred? Let's ask. Please welcome to the field trip the Bay Area's barfly, Jeff Burkhart. Welcome, Jeff.
Well, thank you very much for having me on your show. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. I read your column and I enjoy it.
Well, good. It also appears in the Mercury News in San Jose as well, and in the Argus Courier up in Petaluma. So there's a couple other little spaces spreading out a little bit in the Bay Area.
Well, let's start at the beginning. I understand that you were raised in quintessentially American rye whiskey country, Western Pennsylvania.
That's correct. And interestingly enough about that is rye whiskey is the original American whiskey, right? A lot of people think it's bourbon, but of course bourbon's rise didn't actually happen until after Prohibition. And one of the interesting things in your intro there, you mentioned Prohibition, and I always point out the fact that Prohibition actually didn't end when the 21st Amendment was repealed. They just turned over administration of it to the states, allowing them to determine for themselves what they wanted to do. So, in fact, in lots of parts of the United States right now, there are still large areas that are actually still under the auspices of Prohibition. And in one particular place in Mississippi, whose name escapes me at the moment, was actually dry long before Prohibition and continues to be dry to this day.
You know, you were just talking about whiskey. I heard there's a big resurgence in the popularity of American whiskey. What's the difference between American rye, bourbon, scotch, Canadian, Irish whiskey? Is there a difference?
Oh, of course. There's the first thing is the country of origin. Each country pretty much owns the rights to the particular name. So scotch, of course, is a product of Scotland. Bourbon, rye whiskey are both products of the United States. And they have different agreements with different countries. For instance, the one that comes to mind is the agreement with Mexico. The United States won't make tequila and Mexico won't make bourbon or rye. So those types of things dictate how the products are made, not necessarily what the products are. So the differences between, say, scotch and American whiskey is scotch is made from malted barley, right? So American whiskey is made from either corn or rye, typically, and in some cases, wheat. So the percentages for American whiskeys are 50% or 51% or higher of the respective grain. So rye would be 51%, bourbon would be 51% corn, and wheat whiskey would be 51% wheat whiskey.
What's the most popular one these days? What do people ask for the most?
Well, rye is certainly in a huge upswing. And one of the things about it is that bourbon was never designed to be a quality product. What has happened, and that's true of a lot of alcohols, tequila was that way, even scotch to a certain extent was the working man's drink. The difference with whiskey is that it's made from a grain, which is essentially grass, whether it's wheat or corn or whatever, those are all grasses. And the idea is that that's a much cheaper product. And what happened with rye whiskey is rye whiskey was originally the preeminent whiskey, and then Prohibition came along and stamped out virtually all whiskey production in the United States. And when it came back, they started to use the most abundant, cheapest grain to make the most whiskey. And that grain, of course, is corn. So in regards to rye whiskey, when they started to make rye whiskey more recently in large amounts, they started doing it using all of the newer technology that they've learned by making bourbon from a rock gut product into a more premium product. So what happened is you don't necessarily have any rot gut rye out there. Where with bourbon, there's still a lot of very inexpensive bourbons out there that, you know, are marginal at best. Where with rye, almost all of the rye available now is a much better, well-made product. So that lends itself to you know, a more savvy cocktail community, which we have now, and creates better drinks and just a better experience for the person who's imbibing.
I'm guessing that aside from the obvious reason, the reason that people choose their drinks is because of the taste. Is that right?
Well, no, I would disagree with that.
Okay.
I would say that most people drink what they think they like. And so there's a lot of that. You know, I get people who say they're in the mood for a mixed drink and then order a vodka martini, which, of course, has only vodka in it, which means it's not a mixed drink. So,
right.
You know, there's people have an idea, and this is, I think, stems a lot from James Bond in the 60s, where there's this panache and sophisticated style that goes along with ordering the drink. And the drink, much like a car, represents the person themselves. And so they drink what they think represents who they think they are.
They want to be cool.
Yeah, they're trying to be cool. And the problem, of course, with trying, you either are cool or you're not cool. And that's one of the things where the weirdness starts when people try to be cool. You know, there's a great quote from Clark Gable who said that, you know, he started out playing the sophisticated, debonair kind of character that he thought he would be until one day he woke up and he was that guy. And there's a lot of people out there trying to emulate that behavior, I believe.
Let me ask you this about martinis. Why do we put olives or onions in a martini, and which is more popular?
Well, certainly the olive is much more popular. Bars, for many years, didn't have the capacity to store food products. So what you needed was you needed products that were preserved. Ergo, pickled olives are a great thing that doesn't go bad. And so bartenders start out making drinks, and they reach for the products that they have, and it migrated its way into the cocktail. The Gibson, which is the martini with onions, didn't come along until much later, and of course it was invented for Charles Dana Gibson, who was a very famous illustrator and cocktailian type personality.
So he was the guy who drew the Gibson girls, right?
Correct, exactly right.
Okay.
And the Gibson man, as it turned out later on. He made an entire career out of the thing, and of course the Gibson cocktail is named after him.
What does a dirty martini mean?
Well, dirty means adding olive brine. And I actually, and there's a chapter in the book about why you shouldn't drink those. And one of the reasons is that olives are actually, in fact, a very expensive item. And what happens is the juice of the olives is put into the drink itself. Now, the problem is the bars are using the juice that they have, but they're not going to throw it out at the end of the night. And unfortunately, because of the way things work in the restaurant industry, many bartenders use their fingers to get the olives out of the brine, which they then recycle. So day after day, finger after finger goes into the olive juice, which then goes back into the jar, which then goes back into the little bin, finger after finger again, until after some time you've had, you know, several hundred people dip their fingers into the olive brine, and then of course you do not want to add that to your cocktail.
That sounds pretty dirty.
Yes, indeed.
So, gin or vodka?
In the martini?
Yeah.
Nowadays it's vodka. I mean, of course the original is gin, but if you go into a restaurant or bar now and order a martini, 9 times out of 10 it's going to be vodka at this point. Vodka is, of course, king. And ironically, it's king because it's also the easiest product to make. So the liquor industry has somehow devised a way to convince people that the easiest product to make is worth $20 or $30 a bottle, which is genius on their part.
So gin kind of reminds me of Dickens in the 19th century. Is it not popular anymore?
Well, gin has a resurgence. Every few years, there's a push mainly by marketing to try and find the new fad, whatever that's going to be. It was a cachaça recently for the Caipirinhas, which is the Brazilian distillate. It was, of course, the mojito had rum in it, white rum. Tequila, of course, was very popular in the 80s and 90s and remains popular to this day. Rye whiskey, like we just talked about. So the liquor companies are always looking for what the next new thing is so that they're not left far behind. And gin has definitely got some new cachet, but the problem with gin is it has a very pronounced flavor, and you either like that flavor or you don't. Much like aquavit, which is a Scandinavian product, is caraway. Gin is juniper, and juniper is a very piney, resiny sort of flavor, and you either like that or you don't like that. And by and large, it's not as popular as something that's, say, neutral like vodka.
Well, Jeff Burkhart is such an interesting guy. I think I'm going to turn this interview into a couple of programs. So you've just heard part one. Do tune in next week for part two of Jeff Burkhart, The Barfly. Well, thanks for joining me today on The Field Trip. I welcome your views and comments on the show, as well as your suggestions for future guests. My email address is mitchellfield@radiosausalito.org. The theme music you hear behind me is the tune Superjet, with the fabulous Marin sax man Noel Jukes up front. It's from the recording The Noel Jukes Quartet featuring Matt Clark. Please remember that The Field Trip can be heard Wednesdays at the top of every hour at 1610 on your AM radio dial in Southern Marin, countywide on Wednesdays at noon on cable channel 26, on your computer at radiosausalito.org, or 24 hours a day as a free podcast from the iTunes Store. If you liked today's show, please tell your friends, and if you didn't, well, please tell your enemies. So till next time, this is Mitchell Field saying goodbye, good luck, and see you next week.